Good afternoon and welcome to the 330 Sports Show on a snowy afternoon here in Youngstown, Ohio. We are live downtown at Youngstown Studio. It is November 15th. This show today is going to be kind of the Cleveland fan status, Ohio fan status, mostly from a Northeast Ohio perspective. So as you guys know, we talk a lot about the Browns, about the Guardians, about the Cavs, and about the Buckeyes on this show. And we're going to hit all of those and more. We're going to talk a little NFL, NBA, and some other things. However, I thought it was a good point to touch base with the Cleveland sports scene. And a lot of Cleveland fans are Ohio State fans. So I'm going to lump them all into one conversation and focus on these four teams. And as you can see from the image, you know, last week was Veterans Day, and you can see four very brave military members here and one clown. So I have the military members represented by the Guardians, the Cavaliers, and the Buckeyes. And then, of course, the clown uniform is represented by the Cleveland Browns because, you know, frankly, they're embarrassing us all right now. So that is going to be a little bit about the state of the program today, and that's what we're going to get into. So let's go over kind of each team's resume and kind of what they're good at and, you know, just focus on some most of the positives for some and some of the negatives. So let's start with the Cleveland Guardians, whose season obviously is over, but they won 92 games this year, 92-70, won the American League Central Division, won the wild card round over Tampa Bay, took the Yankees to five games in the ALDS. They had four Gold Glove winners. They had Jose Ramirez win the Silver Slugger. Stephen Kwan finished third in the Rookie of the Year voting. Tonight, Terry Francona is up for the manager of the year in the American League, and they are the youngest team in baseball. So all really great things for the Cleveland Guardians. Joe, would you agree? Pretty positive, right?
Totally.
Okay. All right, let's go to the Cavaliers.
And a season that you wouldn't have expected.
Exactly. That. So a nice little surprise, you know? And then we go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's go to the Cavs. So currently, they're on a little bit of a slide. They are on a four-game losing streak, but they've been competitive in every single one of their games. They are 8-5. They've beaten the Boston Celtics twice, the Eastern Conference champs, who have the best record in the league. They have maybe the third best team in the East if you factor in the Celtics and the Bucks. They're going to be right there in the mix at the end, I think, as long as they stay healthy. Now, they have lost four in a row, a little bit of a negative there, but this is a team that rallies around J.B. Bickerstaff, their head coach. They have Donovan Mitchell, a legit superstar. They have Darius Garland, an up-and-coming all-star point guard who scored 51 points on Sunday night, and again, he's an all-star. You have Jared Allen, who is an all-star. You have Evan Mobley, who was the third pick of the draft last year, and a rising star in this league. A lot of people compare him to a young Kevin Garnett, a young Chris Bosh. He is only going to get better as he matures. So the Cavs, Joe, again, would you say pretty good for?
Thumbs up.
Okay, so we got two thumbs up for two of the main Cleveland sports teams. Let's go to the Cleveland Browns. Let's check out their resume. They are 3-6. They've lost five of their last six games. They are tied for last with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC North, both at 3-6. Their defense, which was thought to be one of the better units in the league coming into the season, headed by Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, you got a good secondary. You got Jadeveon Clowney opposite Myles Garrett. This is maybe the most disappointing unit in all of football. You could put like maybe the Los Angeles Rams offense up there with them and, you know, a few other units here and there, maybe the Green Bay Packers. But the Browns defense is one of the most disappointing in the league. They are the only team in the NFL to allow 30 points four times or more this season. The fans are really on the fire Joe Woods bandwagon. And really calling in Kevin Stefanski's play calling and, you know, possibly saying, hey, let's maybe take that off his plate. Let's just let him focus on the game. But the one positive, let's end with a positive with the Browns. we're thankful, you know, this Thanksgiving season for Nick Chubb, as he is just the best running back in the league. So I listed one positive, Joe, out of that list. You have anything more additions or subtractions to make to that list?
Well, sir, I'm going to have to go back and check the tape.
Well done. Well done. As Kevin Stefanski might say, we would have to watch the tape. So the Browns at 3-6. Now let's go back to a positive now. Now, Northeast Ohio is littered with lots of different college football fans. Obviously, we're in Youngstown. We have Youngstown State right down the street. We have Mount Union. We have Kent State. We have Akron. You know, lots of different colleges to represent. We have some Pitt fans. We have a lot of Notre Dame fans, a very Catholic community here. But I would say Ohio State, for the most part, is the stronghold college team, maybe outside Youngstown State in this area, maybe even more so than Youngstown State. Let's check in with the Buckeyes. They are 10-0, 7-0 in the Big Ten. They are number two in college football behind the Georgia Bulldogs right now, the defending college national champions. They have the number one offense in college football. They have a top 10 defense in college football. They have the Heisman favorite in C.J. Stroud. They have the Biletnikoff favorite, which is the number one wide receiver in the country with Marvin Harrison Jr. And they have offensive weapons everywhere and a defense with lots of different stars on every different level. So they have good defensive linemen. They have maybe a Butkus, which is a – that word always cracks me up. Dick Butkus, one of the greatest names in all of football. But the award for best linebacker in the country is called the Dick Butkus Award. And Tommy Eichenberg is a favorite for that. So they have stars all over the defense littered, and they are just getting better and better and better as a defense as the year goes on. So I think we can give the Guardians an A right now. I think we could probably give the Cavs maybe an A minus, B plus. I think they're, you know, doing pretty well. You know, they had a West Coast road trip, which they struggled a little bit. I think we can give the Buckeyes an A. And what would your grade be for the Browns, though, Joe?
Needs improvement. Not even worthy of a grade.
Incomplete. Yes. I honestly, I mean, if I'm grading individual players, I'm probably giving Nick Chubb an A. And Myles Garrett, maybe like an A minus, B plus. But Myles Garrett, even like with how great he is, I mean, he put himself in danger and missed a game, which, we probably would have won if he would have been able to play in, but, you know, got in that car accident and thank God he's okay. But he put himself at harm's risk and cost the Browns possibly a game. And, you know, 3-6 isn't a pretty number, but 4-5 sounds a hell of a lot better than 3-6. So,
And I see what you did there with your chart. You made like a shit sandwich where you put the Guardians and the Ohio State on the outside, mm-hmm. and the insides are like your, you know, what you got to tolerate.
Well, the Cavs are, you got to put the Cavs somewhere, you know, but like, you're right. Ohio State and the Guardians kind of
leading the pack. And then you have the Browns as the turd. And then you have the Cavs, which is probably
maybe like the
tomato
condiments.
Slice.
Yeah, the condiments.
Like, yeah.
So. The Cavs deserve better than a tomato slice. They're more like a piece of cheese or something.
Right.
So,
good
okay.
Cheese.
Yeah, like really good cheese. Okay, so that's where we're at. A little bit of a rubric right there and a breakdown. So let's get into, what'd you call it? The turd sandwich.
The turd
and sandwich. We talked about Dolphins, all kinds of stuff last week, and it was interesting conversation. If you listened to last Thursday's podcast, Joe and I had all sorts of fun with Dolphin knowledge.
Yes,
so
I heard about that all week after mm-hmm. that episode.
So, did you?
Yes, I did.
So, yeah, very interesting. But unfortunately, Kevin Stefanski, who was 11-0 going into this game against animal mascots that don't fly, has now dropped to 11-1. And we play Buffalo this weekend. They don't fly.
I told you in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they fly. Telling you. I showed you the tape.
We will, by the way. We'll get into this on Thursday because we'll have more of an updated weather report. Have you seen the weather for Buffalo?
No.
They're expecting by Sunday night up to 30 inches of snow.
What?
Not 3 inches. 30 inches.
Whoa.
Of snow. So
is this in Buffalo, I assume?
It is in Buffalo. And Buffalo is, you know, Buffalo and Cleveland are both on Lake Erie, but Cleveland's on the south side of Lake Erie. Buffalo's on the east side. And that, you know, that lake effect snow will go up there. And I'll show you, I think I have it in here towards the end of the show. I'll show you the weather graph. It is, I believe it was like 30.1 inches of snow expected. And then I saw someone in the comment section. This was from a Buffalo meteorologist. Someone said, well, what about the European model? And it said like 24 inches. So they're going to have not just inches, but maybe feet of snow in Buffalo. So
make an interesting game.
Do you remember the Phil Dawson game with like the crazy field goal? It was like 10-7 or 10-3 or something like that. That was one of the most memorable Browns games since they've returned. We could be in store for another one of those, and
that'd be fun to watch.
So we will talk more about the Bills Browns game on Thursday, but I'm sure we'll have some Buffalo facts as well for that game. But I want to get into a little bit of again. I like to give out game balls when the Browns win, and then I like to do some takeaways when the Browns lose. So we're gonna do six takeaways from this Browns game. Let's start with analyzing our defensive effort. There was a couple of things on Twitter I saw where John Johnson looked like he took a couple of plays off. He is supposed to be with Myles Garrett, the leader of that defense. We know Miami is good. Our secondary did a pretty good job for the most part against them, but the defense really did not look good. They look lackadaisical. They look like the heat maybe got to them, or you know, they just still weren't back completely from that bye week. So we all know the stats. You know, the Browns are 3-0 when Nick Chubb rushes the ball 20 or more times. Now they are 0-6 when he does not reach that 20 carry threshold. He carried the ball 11 times and he had like around the 60-yard mark. He did have one really nice touchdown run, but unfortunately just not enough as that game got a little bit away from them right around halftime. We're going to talk about Andrew Berry and his draft picks here in a minute. I have his 3 years of draft picks, and we're going to kind of go over those picks and see how you guys think about that here in a minute. And I put on the next one, no one puts baby in the corner, but the Browns are now in a must-win corner. They are at Buffalo and versus Tampa Bay before Deshaun Watson's return. Deshaun Watson will return back to practice tomorrow. And again, we'll talk more about him and what happens next going forward later in the week. But for now, just know Deshaun Watson will return back to practice and the coaches can work with him. And, you know, he can work his way in there with the players starting tomorrow. I do want to give one positive. I think Donovan Peoples-Jones has been a huge positive this year. He had 99 yards receiving on Sunday. He is looking like a solid number two receiver, but 35 catches, 516 yards. He doesn't have a touchdown though, which really surprises me. With you know all the you know attention that Amari Cooper gets when Njoku's healthy, the attention he gets. So that's one thing. Obviously, scoring points is the name of the game in any sport. So I'd like to get him in the end zone. But overall, he's doing a very, very nice job as a wide receiver for this Cleveland Browns team. And I'm listing this as a positive because I don't really like excuse makers. And I like the fact that Jacoby Brissett is a leader on this team, whether he's the starter or whether he's a backup quarterback going forward. But he just owned it. He said, we knew they were a physical team. We just got our ass whooped today. And frankly, that's what happened. So he owned the loss to the Dolphins, and that's where we stand. So good for Jacoby Brissett stepping up, being a team leader, and that's where we are. So, you know, again, it's a mess right now in Berea. It's not the prettiest situation. The Browns are 3-6, not where we'd hoped they'd be. And you could say if they want to be a playoff team, the next two games, you could argue, are must wins. You have the Bills again this weekend, and you return home to face Tom Brady and the Buccaneers on November 27th. That is the weekend after Thanksgiving. So a lot to look forward to, but the Browns have to start turning it around right now. There's no more time, no more excuses, no more time to BS or whatever before this turns into basically a glorified preseason to end the regular season in Deshaun Watson's final six games with the team. So I want to go over Andrew Berry's draft picks with you guys over the last three football seasons. So starting in 2020, which was like the COVID year draft. And, you know, I'll just kind of give a yay or nay. And if you guys have any opinions, Joe, if you have any opinions, just share them with me. So first overall pick that year in 2020, Jed Wills was the 10th overall pick. He's okay. But is he a first round draft pick? I don't know. Grant Delpit, he's had ebbs and flows. Again, I don't know what to expect with Grant Delpit. Jordan Elliott, to me, has been a disappointment with the Browns. He does start at the defensive tackle spot, but has not shown huge improvement like we thought he might. Jacob Phillips, unfortunately, missed most of last year and is out for the rest of this season. So I don't know. He's been an okay player when he's been on the field, but not great. Harrison Bryant, I think that's a solid pick in the fourth round. Nick Harris, I think that's a solid pick, but unfortunately he tore his ACL in the first preseason game. And then Donovan Peoples-Jones in the sixth round, I think that's a steal. So overall, I'm going to say your fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks that year with Harrison Bryant, Nick Harris, and Peoples-Jones were solid. The jury, I think, is still out on Jed Wills. I know some people are ready to be done with him. But this offensive line could use some shaking up, I think, going into next season. So, Joe, out of those players, anyone stand out to you, good or bad?
I'm going with you that I think Bryant and Peoples-Jones were the highlight of that draft.
Agreed. Okay. So, you know, in a draft, especially in these drafts going forward, where you're not going to have first rounders for a couple years, you got to hit on these later round or middle round picks. So let's go to 2021. Greg Newsome, 26th overall pick. I think that's a home run pick right there. JOK, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. A lot of people had him as a first round talent, but drops to 52 overall. I think that's a pretty solid pick. He's just got to be able to stay on the field. But when he plays, he is good. Anthony Schwartz, he did catch like one pass, I think, on Sunday for like 5 yards. So that's improvement out of him.
He was there.
I mean, like, he caught the ball.
Yeah, hearing his name, I let out a little cheer.
So, okay. But I'm going to say that's a bust right there. James Hudson, he's a nice depth piece in the fourth round. Tommy Togiai, you know, I know he's a Buckeye, but I just don't think he has been an NFL caliber player. Tony Fields, haven't seen enough of him. Richard LeCount, I think, has been a disappointment. And Demetric Felton, I haven't heard of besides like a punt return or two this whole season. So
I won't know until second season, third season, I should say.
Exactly. So I think they nailed the first two picks, which you have to do in the first two rounds. But I don't think the rest of that draft is all that good in 2021. So Newsome and JOK, we'll go with them.
Yep,
as picks there. And then let's go to this year's draft. Now, obviously, you had the trade with the Houston Texans acquiring Deshaun Watson. So you give up your first and second rounder this year. And, you know, just actually they packaged their second rounder this year for some more picks. But let's start with the third round pick. Martin Emerson was the first pick this year. I think that, again, is a home run pick. He has been fantastic. Alex Wright, and again, these guys are all rookies, so the jury is going to be out on these guys. And a lot of times you can't grade a draft. I first of all, it's one of my biggest pet peeves when people grade drafts like the day after the draft and say, oh, this team did great, this team did terrible. Well, how do you know? You know, they have to show it on the field, not what they did in college. But David Bell, starting to show signs of life. Perrion Winfrey has been a mystery. He's been a scratch. There's been some character questions brought up with him off the field. Cade York, we know, has mostly done a nice job, but unfortunately missed two big field goals in that Chargers game. but I think he's got a lot of upside there. Jerome Ford, to me, again, if he stays healthy, I think that could be a nice pick, and he could replace Kareem Hunt next year as your backup running back. Michael Woods, again, haven't seen enough of him. Isaiah Thomas, I think, has been pretty good. And Dawson Deaton, again, injured and haven't been able to see him. So, Joe, out of this year's pick, anybody stand out to you?
I honestly think David Bell is going to be a big star in the future. I mean, once he gets his wheels under him, he's got a mentor undering one of the best wide receivers, you know, in the league right
That's
now.
True.
So,
That's
yeah,
true.
I think he's going to be good.
Okay. Yeah, I like the David Bell pick, and I think he's going to start taking off. He's not going to be a home run hitter, but he's going to be a Jarvis Landry type where he's going to consistently get you catches and yards. And if that could be your third wide receiver, perfect. We love that. Yep. And obviously, if Cade York turns out to be the kicker the Browns need going forward, then I think that's a solid pick. And
he'll figure stuff out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And
we were just used to the Phil Dawsons who had lots of years behind their
right. Leg, right. So. And I feel more comfortable when he's out there than guys we've had in the past. Yeah. So, so we'll see. And again, we'll look at these again next year and kind of see how these guys are doing going into year two. All right. We're going to skip that scoreboard. Let's just take a look at the AFC standings and the AFC playoff picture. Right now, you got the Chiefs in the 1 seed, 7-2. Dolphins are now 7-3 in the number 2 seed. Tennessee Titans 6-3. Ravens 6-3. The Jets, the Bills, and the Patriots. So right now you have all four AFC East teams in the playoffs if it started today, which that's crazy. That's crazy talk. The LA Chargers, the Bengals are just out of it. And then you look down a couple spots and you got the Browns at 3-6, not dead in the water, but not
on life support.
They are in life support and they need that lifeguard to come out and swim to them. So that's where we're at in the AFC playoff picture. There's a lot of movement that's going to still happen here. We're a little bit past the halfway point, so we'll see what happens with that. All right, so that was our Brown segment. Let's go on now to college football in the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Before you do that, can I share a dream with you?
Please.
So I had a dream about the Cleveland Browns the other day. And
okay.
You and I got into, not an argument, but a heated debate about this. The Browns ended up, they decided two things, that they were first going to get rid of their punter. So they got rid of their kicker off of the roster. They freed the spot up and they added another wide receiver. And they decided what they were going to do was never punt the ball again and only go for it on fourth downs. But they were going to use the receiver as his he was a fourth down receiver.
Okay.
And no matter what, they would use him as his always get the first down guy. And I said, statistically, that would work out for you mathematically, and you disagreed. So in that hypothetical weird ass scenario, would you think that if you decided never to punt again and always go for it on fourth down, that it would, you would win more than you lost?
You better have a damn good defense. That's all I will say. But there was actually, that's interesting you say that. I don't think he's coaching anymore, which maybe tells you how much success. But I think there was a college coach at a smaller school. I want to say it was like Presbyterian or something that didn't punt. He had that philosophy and went for it every time. And I'd have to look into the numbers on that. But the analytics say a lot of the times go for it on fourth down, but every time.
Well, no, this wide receiver specialized in fourth down.
Okay. So
the fourth down wide receiver.
Never dropped anything.
Perfect routes.
Yeah. If I could guarantee it, I mean, hell yeah, I'm going for it every time.
Hey, it was a dream, guys. Okay. Come on, back on.
So, okay. That's where we're at. But, We're in the dream state with the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
So hopefully we get that fourth down receiver forward.
It's a new position.
Let's go to a team that actually plays pretty well almost all the time, the Ohio State Buckeyes. So they took on the Indiana Hoosiers this weekend. Hoosiers, not a very good team, but, still a competitive Big Ten East team for the most part. But this year, you know, they're having their big time struggles. Ohio State moves to 10-0, 7-0 overall. Ohio State covers the 40-point spread and nearly covers the over by itself, winning this game big. The history between these two schools, Ohio State is now 78-12-5, with Indiana's last win coming in 1988 over the Buckeyes. And I want to share a quote with you from Ryan Day. And I'm just going to read this verbatim so I don't mess it up. But that's one of the reasons why college football is special. That's one of the reasons why you coach, is to see something like that happen. And hopefully there's somebody out there that's going through tough times that can see that as motivation to overcome. And that was based on Cam Babb's touchdown in the fourth quarter. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this guy if you don't know the story. If you're an Ohio State fan, I'm sure you know this story, but we'll get into it here in just a second. But again, that is the Buckeyes' 28th consecutive win over the Hoosiers. They outgained Indiana 662-259. On the day, the Scarlet and Gray rushed for 340 total yards, and they threw for 322, averaging 9.1 yards per pass attempt. Now, let's get into the Cam Babb story. This guy is just awesome. He is the recipient of the Block O jersey. That is the number zero jersey for Ohio State. He is a two-time team captain, and this is a guy that didn't play, keep in mind. And he's a team captain. He is a former top 100 recruit at the wide receiver position. He had played in a total of 10 games in 5 years, mostly on special teams. He has had four torn ACLs, two in both knees, which is just insane. I coached a girl in high school that had tore her ACL her freshman year. And then she tore it again her sophomore year and really was thinking about not playing, and then came back, and now she's killing it playing volleyball at the collegiate level. Rehabbing a knee injury like that is not for the faint of heart. It is a major surgery. You are out. Now, you know, modern technology has got it where, you know, some of the top of the line athletes can return in about 8 months. But you got to work for that. You got to go through rehab. You have to do a lot of work to get through that. Not to mention, it hurts. It hurts. It swells up. And Cam Babb this year has missed some time because he has so much scar tissue in that knee that, you know, sometimes he's just got to let it heal. So this was just an unbelievable season. He missed the entire 2018 season, the entire 2019 season, and the 2021 season. Just unbelievable. And for him to go out and score a touchdown in the fourth quarter was just an amazing story for not just him and Ohio State, but just college football in general. Want to touch on Marvin Harrison Jr. here. He's just an absolute freak. Joel Klatt basically put it out there and said he is the best non-quarterback he has ever covered. At the collegiate level. So the best non-quarterback, you take out quarterbacks, he is the best player outside of a quarterback that he's ever seen on a college football field. That is high praise for someone that is only a sophomore in college. CJ Stroud, back on track with 5 touchdowns, is now the Heisman favorite at about plus 150. The next closest person is Hendon Hooker of Tennessee, which is plus 400. The only negative really to come out of this game for the Buckeyes is injury concerns at the running back position. Henderson did not play in this game, and Mayan Williams went out in the second quarter with a high ankle sprain or some sort of ankle sprain. But Ryan Day said it is not a long-term injury. I do not expect him to play this weekend so he can prepare and be ready for Michigan in 2 weeks. So that's kind of the basic overview. Do want to give out some Buckeye leaves this weekend for some great performances for Ohio State. Let's start with obviously CJ Stroud, 17 of 28, 297 yards, 5 touchdowns. He has a 34-4 touchdown to interception ratio on this season. He is also the first quarterback in Big Ten history to throw for 30 touchdowns or more in back-to-back seasons. Mayan Williams, this all came in the first half, by the way. 15 rushes, 147 yards, 9.8 yards per carry, and 1 touchdown. And I was at that game on Sunday, or I'm sorry, on Saturday too, and it was snowing and it was cold. So, you know, these were legit performances in not the best of weather. Marvin Harrison, if you're watching, you can probably see that picture. He just is an absolute freak. He made maybe the best catch of the year, getting 1 foot in bounds while the other leg was about 2 yards out of bounds. But he had 7 catches for 135 yards and 1 touchdown. He had a 58-yard touchdown on that play and 1 rush for 18 yards in the game. Cam Babb, obviously, got to give him a Buckeye leaf for just being a phenomenal story and scoring his first touchdown. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to give it to Lathan Ransom. You know, he had a blocked punt in this game. He also just is becoming a force on the defensive side of the ball for the Buckeyes at the safety position. So that is where we are at with that. A check-in with the schedule. There is only 2 games left to go in this regular season. The Buckeyes are at Maryland this week and then home for Michigan. The first time they will play either of these teams, Maryland on the road and Michigan at home in 4 years, because both of those games were canceled in the 2020 season due to COVID restrictions. So big time games coming up for the Buckeyes. We'll have a full breakdown of the Maryland game on Thursday show. And obviously we won't have a Thursday show before the Michigan game because that's Thanksgiving, but I will have a show ready for you to go before that weekend. And I want to throw out a did you know. We do these usually once a week, but did you know the Ohio State Buckeyes, now they played 10 games, so it's easy math, 15.6 points a game, which is 156 points allowed on defense this year. 42 of those points have been scored by the opposing team during garbage time. So if you do the math, 26.9% of all the opponent's points scored have come during garbage time. And I updated Tyler Shoemaker's numbers, but those were from him, so I wanted to give him credit on that one. But pretty amazing stats there when 27% of the opponents scored are basically, you know, when your backup or third string defense is on the field. So great numbers there. Let's look at the Big Ten standings, see where everyone kind of sits right now. Buckeyes and Michigan sitting there at number 2 and number 3 in the country. Penn State comes in at number 11 now in the country. So that's looking like a really quality win for the Buckeyes now. Penn State's only 2 losses are to Ohio State and Michigan. So 3 pretty solid teams at the top of the Big Ten East. Big Ten West is a huge mess. And look at those conference, you know, wins and losses. Illinois, Iowa, Purdue, Minnesota, all 4-3, and Wisconsin at 3-4. So all those teams, there could potentially be a 4-way tie for the Big Ten West, would create a huge mess. And that's what we're here for. We love it. But basically the prize for winning the Big Ten West is playing the winner of the Ohio State-Michigan game. So not necessarily a great prize, and you know, we'll see what happens there. So let's take a look at the top 25 for this week. Georgia still at number 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, TCU 4. Those are the only 4 undefeated teams left in the entire country, and they're 1-4. Pretty simple stuff there. But, you know, you had Oregon, who was the number 6 team. They lost. LSU jumps up a little bit. They have 2 losses. Alabama's back up to number 8, but they have 2 losses. So it's going to be an interesting thing. I really think right as it stands now, there's only 5 teams possibly, in my opinion, that I think will make the college football playoffs. And I'll talk to you about those in a minute. I'm going to skip ahead here. But those teams are Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU. So let's leave those 4 teams open. And then Tennessee, I put up there. So Georgia, they just have at Kentucky and Georgia Tech left. They're gonna beat both of those teams. They're going to be 12-0. And I think even if they lost in the SEC title game, I think they're still in the playoff. Ohio State, 10-0. Obviously, they have a de facto semifinal or Big Ten East championship game coming up to get in the Big Ten final versus Michigan. So Michigan and Ohio State will play each other in 2 weeks. Michigan has a semi-tough game this weekend at home against Illinois. Illinois is going to be frustrated. They're coming off a couple bad losses, but they're a decent team that can run the ball and play some defense. So we'll see what happens this weekend. TCU's resume, 10-0, just knocked off Texas this past weekend. They have three quality wins. And then Tennessee, we know they have beat number 10 Alabama. They've beat number 7 LSU. And their only loss was to number 1 Georgia. So they are still very much alive for the college football playoff. And they only have at South Carolina and Vanderbilt left. So they're going to be 11-1. And they're not going to be playing in the SEC title game. So they're going to look to slide into that number 4 spot. Then you got LSU, USC, Alabama, Clemson, Utah, Penn State, and Oregon. And really, USC might be the only other school that I could possibly see sliding in there. So I would say USC maybe as an outside chance to get in the college football playoff. I don't think Clemson, the committee likes them, but they will have two opportunities. I believe they still have North Carolina left and the ACC title game. So we'll check in with them pretty soon. So that's a look at college football. We'll talk more about that on Thursday and what's coming up for this coming weekend. Let's do a real quick check-in with the Cleveland Cavaliers before we get out of here. But the Cavs right now, offensive rating, second best in basketball, scoring basically 116.7 points a game, or I should say 116.7 points per 100 possessions. Their defensive rating is third best in the league, which basically giving up about 110 points per 100 possessions, which if you, you know, just do the quick math there, subtract it, 7.1 plus minus kind of there. They are first in the NBA. Field goal percentage is ninth best in the NBA. 3-point percentage, nearly 40%. Second best in the NBA. They're shooting nearly 80% from the free throw line, which is 10th best in the NBA. They are 4-1 at home, 4-4 on the road. And currently, obviously, they are on a 4-game losing streak, which they hope to snap tomorrow night. But they do play the Milwaukee Bucks, which will be a challenging game. So just a real quick look at this weekly schedule here. So they will be at the Bucks tomorrow night, Friday back home for the Hornets. Sunday, if you watch that game on Sunday, I will be literally right behind the Miami Heat bench. I have tickets in the front row, not a flex or anything, but I'm just saying, if you're watching that game, look for me and maybe I'll wear a weird t-shirt or hold up a sign or something, but I will be literally right behind the Miami Heat bench on Sunday night. They are home Monday as well against the Hawks, and then home again against the Trailblazers. So a nice little homestand coming up for the Cavs here, coming up before Thanksgiving. So just going to highlight a couple players here. Donovan Mitchell did miss Sunday's game, which was a big loss because, you know, Darius Garland had to kind of do it all himself. But basically still averaging 32 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists a game. He's doing a fantastic job for the Cavs. Look at these numbers for Darius Garland, what he did on Sunday night against the Timberwolves. 51 points, 6 assists, 2 rebounds, 2 steals, and 10 three-pointers. That was the first 50-point game in the NBA this season until about 2 hours later when this guy did it. This is one of the most impressive numbers. And Joe, last week we were talking about the quadruple-double. Joel Embiid almost got that quadruple-double, which only, by the way, 4 players in NBA history have got the quadruple-double. He was only 2 assists and 3 blocks shy, which is still a lot, but it's so close. He had 59 points, going 19 of 28 from the field, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 steal, and 7 blocks. I think he is going to be your MVP this year. Obviously, we're only 12, 13 games in, but just an amazing performance by Joel Embiid. And finally, Joe, I did want to show you this weather forecast. This is the image that I got from Rochester, which is up in the Buffalo area. But look at the difference. Rochester is, I don't know, I would have to guess maybe like 40 miles from Buffalo. They're projected to get 3.3 inches of snow. Buffalo, 31.1 inches. And that is through 10 p.m. on Sunday. So the only thing that makes me nervous about this for the Browns is how the hell are they going to get back? They're probably busing to this game because Cleveland to Buffalo is not a very far drive. I would imagine at most it's 2.5 hours, but you're trudging through that snow. They might be staying the night in Buffalo on Sunday night till those roads get cleared. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we'll call up like Andrew DiPaolo or one of our local meteorologists on Thursday and see if they can give us a Browns Bills perspective on the weather for Thursday. But 31 inches of snow. Let's make sure Nick Chubb gets at least one carry for each inch of snow Buffalo gets, because we know what happens when Nick Chubb runs the ball. Good things happen. So, yeah, that's our show for today. Hopefully you guys, we thank you guys for tuning in. Hopefully you'll learn something, but appreciate you guys watching. Follow the 330 Sports Show on social. Follow Youngstown Studio on social. For Joe Danier, my name's Justin, and we will see you guys on Thursday. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we will...